Randy Babbitt is out of the office, maybe for good. Two high-tech execs embarrass themselves on an Air Canada flight. And the U.S. Coast Guard is prosecuting a crash survivor. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, December 6th, 2011. FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt no longer has long-term FAA reauthorization at the top of his worry list. He's on indefinite leave from his job, while Department of Transportation officials and their lawyers huddle to discuss whether he'll keep his job. If you missed it yesterday, Babbitt is accused of doing what so many people have done for as long as there have been cars and holiday celebrations. He was pulled over Saturday night by police in Fairfax City, Virginia, who say he was driving on the wrong side of the road. He was arrested on charges of DUI and taken to jail, then released on his own recognizance. This happens to a lot of people, but most of those people don't work for Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood, who's made the fight against drunk driving a keystone of his agenda. It also appears LaHood and President Obama weren't told the news until after it had already been on ANN for an hour. It seems politically implausible that Babbitt will keep his job, and that's either terrible news or not so terrible news, depending on which issues matter to you. When he appeared for the annual Meet the Administrator forum at Oshkosh in 2009, about 2 months after being sworn in, Babbitt, the retired pilot and two-term pilot union president, promised to make science-based crew rest rules an early priority. He talked of the importance of moving past obsolete navigational and flight training paradigms. He quickly settled a long dispute with the controllers union. But Babbitt quickly transitioned to a politician. He pleaded ignorance and promised a review in 2009 when an audience member at Oshkosh questioned the FAA's inexplicable crackdown on through-the-fence agreements. Babbitt then came back the next year to defend the crusade. He supported restrictions on the BAR program, which would have turned your IFR flight plan into an implied permission to have your movements tracked by your business competitors and exploited by anti-aviation activists. He promoted general aviation user fees. And this year at Oshkosh, he dodged a question from our own Jim Campbell about a pilot's Bill of Rights, which could curb abuses by the FAA, responding instead with a non sequitur about NOTAM publication procedures. Regardless of the politics, it's really sad to see Randy Babbitt's mugshot out there on the internet. It's also possible this has all been a terrible mistake. AOPA's Craig Fuller and EAA's Rod Hightower have both expressed support for Babbitt and warned against a rush to judgment. But Ray LaHood doesn't strike me as a very patient guy, and his boss is in a presidential re-election campaign. We'll keep following this story for you. It may play out very quickly. A bad year for Research in Motion, the maker of the BlackBerry mobile device, just got worse. Two company executives, identified as 45-year-old George Campbell and 38-year-old Paul Wilson, both residents of the Toronto area, have pleaded guilty in a Canadian court to one count each of mischief after what's described as drunken, disruptive behavior forced an Air Canada flight from Toronto to Beijing to turn back and make an unscheduled landing in Vancouver. Peter Fitzpatrick, a spokesman for Air Canada, tells the New York Times the plane was just north of Alaska when it returned to Canada. But another source who spoke on condition of anonymity tells the paper the plane was actually closer to Beijing, but the airline was worried that Chinese law enforcement officials would impound the plane if they continued to their destination. As if the aborting of the flight after 7 hours in the air wasn't annoying enough to the other passengers, some reportedly were involved in altercations with the two men before they could be handcuffed by the cabin crew. Air Canada adds that because the crew was up against duty time limits, the passengers had to be put up for the night in Vancouver before they could continue on to Beijing. Research in Motion has said only, quote, "Based on the limited information available at this time, RIM has suspended the individuals involved pending further investigation," unquote. Neither man could be reached for comment. Following their guilty pleas, they've been ordered to pay fines of almost $34,000 each. RIM calls its BlackBerry Playbook mobile device, quote, "the world's first professional-grade tablet," unquote. But it's been a distant also-ran to the Apple iPad, criticized by some reviewers for its smaller screen size and poor software. BlackBerry customers a few weeks ago endured a days-long email outage when the company's worldwide server network crashed. The company's stock has fallen from about $63 to $17 in the past year. That's a drop of over 70%. Maybe it's time to try professional-grade executives. The TSA is defending its latest bit of hysteria, in which a teenaged girl missed her flight out of Norfolk, Virginia, because checkpoint screeners insisted that the metal outline of a pistol in the artwork on her purse constituted a replica weapon and could not be carried on the plane. Vanessa Gibbs pointed out that no one could mistake the design on her purse for an actual gun, but the screener stood firm. She eventually checked the purse in her luggage, and because she was flying Southwest, she was able to rebook on a later flight at no cost after she missed her original flight. But the new flight was to Orlando, while her mother had driven to meet her original flight in Jacksonville. A U.S. Coast Guard helicopter co-pilot who was the only survivor of a wire strike last year off the coast of Washington State has recovered and been cleared to retrain. But for now, 31-year-old Lieutenant Lance Leone is flying a desk, and the Coast Guard has charged him with negligent homicide, dereliction of duty, and destruction of government property in the crash of the MH-60 Jayhawk. One of the three fatalities in the crash was Brett Banks, a 33-year-old from Rock Springs, Wyoming. The Washington Post reports that Banks' family does not blame Leone and thought it had achieved closure. Sandra Banks, Brett's mother, tells the paper, quote, "We're very upset about it. We don't think it should be happening. Another family's being destroyed and it's breaking our hearts," unquote. The Post reports Leone has earned a long list of Coast Guard honors, including commendation medals. Witnesses to the accident say that during the flight from Astoria, Oregon to the cruise base in Sitka, Alaska, the helicopter was flying low and hit power cables strung 1,900 feet from La Push, Washington to James Island. Leone was pulled from the water by onlookers. The Coast Guard charges he failed to properly navigate to avoid charted hazards and negligently failed to ensure the helicopter was flying at a higher altitude. He's also being held accountable for the loss of the $18 million aircraft. He could face more than 7 years in prison if convicted at court-martial. Lieutenant Leone, obviously under the circumstances, declined comment to the Washington Post. But his father, George, who lives in Florida, told the paper the wire span was marked with orange balls near the poles, but not across the span itself. There have been no charges filed posthumously against the pilot who was actually at the controls. The elder Leone notes, quote, "The sole survivor, they're trying to blame him. It's just unbelievable," unquote. There could be an incentive here for scapegoating. Maintenance of the power line is the responsibility of the U.S. Coast Guard, and the line has taken down two aircraft in the past, one in the late 1950s and another one in 1961. Still ahead, the Pentagon says there's no evidence Iran shot down a Sentinel drone. SB-47 shows what it can do to update the Bell 47G. And NASA revisits our tolerance for sonic booms. You're listening to Aeronet.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, December 6th. I'm Paul Plack. The U.S. military is dismissing the latest claim by Iran that it has downed a U.S. drone as a distraction tactic by that country in the face of growing international isolation. The Pentagon does say the U.S. Air Force lost control of an RQ-170 Sentinel reconnaissance and surveillance drone over western Pakistan last week, but there is no evidence it was shot down by Iran. Reuters notes the incident comes at a time when Tehran is trying to quell growing international outrage over the storming of the British embassy last week. That incident followed new British sanctions on Iran's central bank in response to reports that Iran's nuclear enrichment program is making strides. That embassy was closed, and back in Britain, Iranian diplomats were expelled. Germany, France, and Spain have recalled their ambassadors from Iran. Tensions remain as the U.S. and Israel have hinted that military action against Iran could be coming if the development of nuclear capability becomes a threat to Iran's neighbors. A measure passed in the U.S. Senate, which would restrict Iranian oil exports, has drawn a warning from Iran's foreign ministry that such a move could push crude oil prices past $250 a barrel. With the possible exception of the Piper J-3 Cub, there may be no aircraft so iconic as the Bell 47G. Mention the word helicopter to most people outside aviation, and the version of the 47G with the bubble canopy and open-frame tailboom is what they'll see in their heads. More than 60 years after its introduction in 1946, Bell last year transferred the type certificate for the 47 to Scott's Bell 47 Incorporated, or SB-47, an outgrowth of Scott's Helicopter Services in Minnesota, which has been offering support for the type since 1981. This week, SB 47 is showing its vision for the future of the aircraft at the National Agricultural Aviation Association Convention and Trade Show in Las Vegas, Nevada, which officially opens on Wednesday. The company is displaying a refurbished 47G2A agricultural helicopter fitted with an Oregon Aero interior and Isolair spray system. SB 47 General Manager Neil Marshall observes, quote, "This is a perfect example of the durability of the Model 47 and what makes it such a great helicopter. This helicopter was manufactured in 1955, has over 10,000 hours on the airframe, yet operators will witness at NAAA that after our refurbishment, it's hard to believe it's not a brand new helicopter," unquote. Oregon Aero and Isolair Helicopter Services will both have representatives attending the show with Scottsbell 47. And finally today, generally speaking, it's against the law to make supersonic flights over populated areas, where the resulting sonic booms annoy residents and, in severe cases, can break windows. But NASA and the aviation industry are studying technology that will reduce the impact of sonic booms. That could one day clear the way for supersonic coast-to-coast airline flights. NASA reports its Dryden Flight Research Center recently completed the latest quiet sonic boom research study at Edwards Air Force Base. The Waveforms and Sonic Boom Perception and Response Project, or WSPR, gathered data from more than 100 residents of the base who volunteered to provide their individual attitudes towards sonic booms produced by aircraft in supersonic flight over the base. One of the instruments used in the project is called Snoopy, short for Supersonic Notification of Overpressure Instrumentation. The acronym is a play on words. The device is enclosed in a commercial doghouse. Snoopy records local sonic booms by date, time, and intensity 24/7. Participants used a standardized questionnaire to provide information every time they heard any sonic boom while at home. The research is interesting, but it seems reasonable to ask whether results obtained from people who choose to live in an Air Force base will be representative of, say, Santa Monica. Edwards Air Force Base is probably one of only a few places where a sonic boom causes residents to exclaim, "Cool!" That's the latest from Aero News. If you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.